Hardware and software.
Introduction. It's really easy to buy something without knowing much about it. This is especially true in the world of computers. When you walk into an Apple store to buy a new laptop, you're typically busy choosing the model and various other features like the high-resolution camera, the quality graphics card, battery life, and the famous tech question, how much memory do you want? Once you've found the laptop that suits your needs, expectations, demands, and of course, budget, you take it home and don't think a whole lot about how it works until the day that it doesn't work. It's easy not to worry about the details, but under the hood of your laptop is a specific operating system designed to make your computer function safely. And knowing more about how this operating system works will help you be more cybersecure. What's in the box? When you get a new device of some kind, opening the carefully packaged box can be a pretty satisfying experience. Everything is so new and untouched, and soon it will be in your hands and ready to assume its role as your own personal assistant. But before you start fighting with the packaging, let's slow down and think about the many components within that device. Every single one of them has a specific purpose in the larger system. And once you can describe what these components do, you will be in a much better position to really understand your phone and what steps to take if something goes wrong. Types of computers. In the 17th century, the term computer did not describe a machine, but rather a person capable of performing calculations. However, people eventually started collecting so much data that the efforts of mere mortals were not nearly fast enough to process it all, and this led to the building of bigger digital systems. Today, a computer is a programmable machine used for storing and processing information, typically through some kind of instructional program. Not all computers are created equal. Some are designed for personal use, while others are made to handle complex demands. Aside from the glowing screen of your own personal device, you are likely using many other computers throughout the day, from ATM machines to chip readers to check-in screens. In the modern world, computers are everywhere, constantly engaged in a billion different tasks, and we rely on them heavily to make life work. Some computers are massive, and some can fit in your pocket. But at the end of the day, they all share the same four basic components of input, storage, processing, and output. In this unit, we will focus specifically on computers and operating systems, OSs, with mobile devices and wireless options to be discussed later. But in an effort to see the whole picture, let's take a minute to look at all the different categories. Desktop computers. Desktop computers are the ones you see sitting on the table at work, home, or school. They are usually comprised of a computer case, monitor, keyboard, and mouse, and are not meant to be portable. Laptop computers. Laptop computers, on the other hand, are meant to be carried around and can sit neatly on your lap. They run on a battery. Tablet computers. Tablet computers are handheld computers like iPads that are even more lightweight and portable and have touchscreen displays. They make use of cloud computing to access data because they have limited storage capacities. Embedded computers. Embedded computers are the ones we know from the Internet of Things, IoT. They are integrated into another device with the intention of making the overall system work more effectively through dedicated functions. Servers. Servers deliver information to other computers through a network, which you will soon learn a lot more about. In the past, they were large, bulky computers. However, over time, they have become more manageable. The information you see on the Internet is stored on a server of some kind. Smartphones. Smartphones have recently been recategorized as small computers because of the many functions they perform. Most smartphones these days can do almost as much as full-sized machines. Wearables. Wearables are the newest trend in tiny technology. They usually come in the form of smartwatches or fitness trackers designed to be worn as a wireless form of data collection and communication. Hardware. Hardware relates to any physical aspect of your computer, like the keyboard, mouse, motherboard, or cables connecting its various parts. The term hardware implies permanence, as it cannot really be altered once it's made. Think of it this way. Although you probably need a screwdriver to access it, you could realistically touch the hardware in your computer. It's tangible and hard, like screws and nails. Regardless of whether we're talking about a tablet, laptop, or smartphone, hardware is always categorized the same way. Without it, your computer would not exist and certainly could not be used. There are two main types of hardware used in a computer. The first type is external hardware, which refers to the material installed outside of the computer. A printer falls into this category because it is outside the main computer case. Other external hardware includes external hard drives, headphones, and monitors. Internal hardware is the second type, and it refers to devices installed inside the computer. The main internal computer components include the following. Central Processing Unit, CPU. This component is responsible for interpreting and executing most of the commands it receives from other pieces of hardware. The Central Processing Unit also falls under other terms, such as microprocessor, central processor, or computer processor. Motherboard. As the mother of the computer, the motherboard connects all the parts together via cables. It can be considered the backbone of the computer, as it sits at the center of all its functions. Although they vary in size and form, all devices have motherboards, just like all people have mothers. Power Supply Unit, PSU. This hardware converts power from the outlet into a usable energy source for the many parts inside the computer case. It takes the alternating current, AC, and turns it into a continuous form of power called direct current, DC. A PSU also regulates overheating by controlling voltage, which can sometimes change depending on the power source. Hard disk drive, HDD. About the size of a paperback novel, a hard disk drive is the biggest and most important piece of data storage hardware. It stores critical things like the OS, software titles, and other files. It can also be referred to as a fixed disk drive or C drive. HDDs are often encrypted with specialized software to protect files from unauthorized use. Video card. This is an expansion card that allows the computer to send graphical information to a video display device. TVs, projectors, and basic monitors all use the video card to display images. They always include a graphics processing unit, GPU, and are installed into a special slot on the motherboard. Port. When we're talking hardware, a physical port is a connection point where cables, routers, and modems, or other peripheral devices, can be plugged into your computer. When you plug in a USB stick or flash drive, you are plugging it into a USB port. When you want to connect your device to a larger video output screen or projector, you will likely use a high-definition multimedia interface, HDMI cable, in an HDMI port. Cabling. In order for two or more computers to connect over a network or link up to share printers, scanners, and such, they often need to be physically connected through a type of hardware known as network cabling. These are just basic wires that are configured in different ways to achieve various goals. There are a lot of different types of cables out there, all of which play a certain role in cybersecurity, so they will be fully covered under our upcoming discussion on network security. But for now, just remember, cabling is an essential element of computer hardware. Software. If the hardware on a device wants to run properly, it needs software. Systems utilities are one of the core software functions on a computer, as they effectively tell the hardware what to do and allows users to manage all related functions. Sometimes, systems utilities are included with the computer package, or the instructions can be downloaded from the internet. Here are the two main types of software. System software. System software is also called low-level software because users typically don't interact with them very often. These are the programs that run the computer's hardware and applications. Your device's OS is an example of system software, as is the BIOS, basic input-output system, that boots the machine and helps connect the drivers, and all your peripheral devices, so the computer remembers they are there. This category includes utility software, designed to help users configure and optimize their resources by using tools like antivirus software and following backup procedures. Application software. Application software is the second classification of software, and it is responsible for the applications we are most familiar with. They allow users to perform general-purpose tasks, like browsing the web, creating documents, or playing games. As you learn more about computers and the many security factors related to them, it's important to think about which ones relate to the device's hardware, which ones are connected to the software, and, as the course continues, how they might work together to provide increased security. Memory and storage. Every second of every minute of every hour of every day, computers are accessing massive amounts of memory stored in units known as bytes, so they can maximize their performance and serve users well. And, as you would guess, there are a lot of technologies out there designed to support this effort. Memory management is the superpower that oversees the primary memory in a computer, keeps track of all its locations, and decides which memory goes where, how, and when. There are two main types of computer memory to, well, remember: primary and secondary. Primary memory. Otherwise known as primary storage, primary memory functions internally and is considered volatile because it cannot hold on to data forever. It stores information for direct access by the CPU. Although the information can be stored for a time, it is subject to interference and decay, much like short-term memory in humans. Random access memory. Random access memory, RAM, is arguably the best-known form of computer memory and is named such because data can be accessed directly and in any order without accessing the hard drive. RAM allows your computer to multitask, and therefore, it is an important contributor to how your computer performs. The opposite of RAM is known as sequential access method, SAM, as it can only be accessed in sequence, much like an old cassette tape. Virtual memory. As a memory management technique, virtual memory uses the hardware and software of an OS to expand memory and compensate for shortages. Computers only have so much RAM, so virtual memory creates virtual address spaces to be conveniently translated into physical ones on the hard drive. Software within the OS may extend these abilities to provide a space that can actually exceed that of real memory and thereby gain access to more storage than is physically present on the computer. Cache memory. Cache memory is just like a cache of riches, a collection of information stored in a place that is easily accessible when you're in a pinch. Cache memory is a type of random access memory that a computer can find quicker than normal RAM. It is used as a staging ground to access information from the larger and slower main memory. Secondary memory. Secondary memory, or secondary storage, is external storage that is considered non-volatile because it retains its data when it is powered down. It is where programs and data are kept for long periods of time, maybe even forever. It allows a user to store data that can be instantly retrieved, transported, and used by applications and services. You are likely more familiar with secondary storage technologies because you probably use them to transfer information to and from different computers when not relying on the cloud. USB flash drives, external hard drives, and photo cards are examples of secondary storage. Other key players in secondary storage are read-only memory, ROM. In most personal computers, the ROM stores critical programs, such as those that boot up a computer and can't be removed, only read. Unlike RAM, this kind of pre-recorded memory is built into the computer and does not disappear when turned off because it is sustained by a long-life battery. As a result, it is known as non-volatile memory. Hard disk drives, HDDs. Almost every computer these days contains one or more HDDs used for permanently storing digital information. That means, if the power goes out, computers can still remember. First invented in the 1950s, HDDs once only held a few megabytes of data. But they now have the ability not only to store an incredible amount of information in one small space, but to access any of it instantaneously. Solid-state drives, SSDs. Although SSDs are built differently than HDDs, with some separate functionalities, they are both used in similar ways. SSDs are similar to memory sticks in that they have no moving parts and store data in microchips, while HDDs read information with a mechanical arm. This is where the main difference lies, as SSDs are known to be much faster as a result. Think about it this way. Is it faster to walk across the room and grab the book you need, or simply tap the table in front of you and make the book appear? An SSD demands less physical labor from users and less mechanical movement from itself. While the idea of memory seems pretty innocent, it often plays a big role in cyber attacks. Computer viruses are passed around when users mistakenly download infected files onto their device or transfer them to a secondary device through some kind of external memory storage, like a flash drive. This will be discussed much more in coming units, but for now, just remember that this is a great example of how a virus can use memory to corrupt other files in a system. Removable media. Portable storage devices that can be removed from a computer while the system is running and then used elsewhere are known as removable media, like USB drives, smartphones, SD cards, and any kind of disk, like a CD or DVD, and they can make transitioning data between computers easier. Some removable media readers and drives are integrated into the computer, while others are themselves removable. Click to see why removable media is convenient. Use a bootable live OS. Add storage space for PCs and laptops. Use a bootable installation, such as Windows. Backup storage for files on PCs, laptops, and servers. The use of removable media in an environment needs to be monitored carefully, because when data is literally on the move between computers, it is susceptible to all sorts of outside threats and vulnerabilities. It's important to understand when it is acceptable to use removable media, what type of content is appropriate to store, and how it should be copied. Other removable media. Back in the 1970s, when there were cassette tapes, something called tape backup was also developed as a form of data storage. Just like an ordinary tape recorder, a tape drive copies data onto a loop of flexible celluloid-like material so it can be easily read or erased. Although data storage has evolved into the more modern cloud storage, tapes are still used because they have a large capacity for storing data and are quite economical. Their only drawback is that the information they hold is stored sequentially, which means users must roll through the whole tape to find what they are looking for. Otherwise known as blank DVD-Rs, CD-Rs are used for backing up computer files and storing recordable media in the form of images, music, or text files. They are useful for recording both audio and video, which makes them ideal for archiving files you want to keep, transferring files between PCs, or sending large files to friends. Yes, they are compatible in format with most DVD players and cost less than other options, but they can only be copied onto once. Most people prefer to put routine system backups and temporary files onto some kind of rewritable disk, so it can be used another 1,000 times. Remember, data assets can be removed from a computer while a system is running if you are using removable media like CDs, DVDs, or USB flash drives. Just like a person walking into a building can hide any kind of harmful substance on his or her person, removable media can introduce infected material to healthy systems just by entering the scene. And because it's so small, it's easy to carry it around without detection. This is an important thing to remember, because it can affect the level of access control you have over your network devices. Don't believe it? Just consider these true stories. While at work, a British policeman put a 4 GB memory stick in his pocket and took it home. Then, he lost it. Turns out it contained sensitive details about terrorist cells in the area and those currently being tracked by authorities. Oops! An IT consultant copied some files onto a USB drive, which contained the records of all 84,000 prisoners in both England and Wales. Then, he mailed it to another department for investigation. But it never arrived. An employee in India spent 2 years stealing the private records of 200,000 citizens by copying files from the corporate network onto a flash drive. He then sold them to a hacker and compromised the identity of every person in those records. A clever Russian hacker created a cybersecurity worm that could easily be placed on any flash drive. It was then inadvertently placed in the USB port of a military computer. That's a problem. Operating systems. To the average user, the OS might seem like just another component, but it is actually the most important program running on a computer. As we unpack the term, you will begin to see how the OS ensures everything on your device functions as it should. To successfully run programs and software applications, every computer, whether it be a tiny smartphone or a massive military database, must have an operating system, OS, to support the computer's basic functions and coordinate all the activities of the hardware devices. An application program is simply a program designed to perform a set of coordinated functions, jobs, or activities for the convenience of the user. Applications exist for all types of computers, from desktops to laptops to mobile devices. Much like a traffic cop, the OS ensures different application programs are not running at the same time and destined for collision. And it also operates as a security watchdog, always policing the system to make sure unauthorized users, or hackers, do not intrude into places where they don't belong. This process relies on rules or patterns called macro instructions, or macros, which specify how a certain input sequence of characters should be mapped in order to achieve a certain outcome. Macros are used to make a sequence of computing instructions more decipherable, more convenient, and more error-free for the user. Similarly, keyboard and mouse macros allow certain actions to be abbreviated into less time-consuming shortcuts, which offer automated efficiency. The OS being used in any given situation depends on the type of computer and what it needs to accomplish. The computers we use daily are called client computers, so we refer to their OS as a client operating system, COS. Although it only supports a single user, a COS supports the functions of both desktop and portable computers. A network server computer, on the other hand, is a massive computer with larger resources because it offers its services to the many client computers that are connected to it. Want to take a look at your old emails from a couple years ago? You're using a server. Network servers have their own operating systems called network operating systems, NOS, which gives them the functionality needed to share data, users, security, applications, and other networking functions. Parts of an operating system. An OS has four main parts: the process manager, memory manager, file manager, and device manager. Process manager. The process manager oversees the tasks your CPU is doing in order to make your applications run smoothly. It keeps track of all the input provided to the computer, as well as all the communication coming from other hardware devices at work. It also prioritizes what the CPU should interact with at a certain time. Memory manager. The memory manager is like a front desk librarian whose job it is to keep the memory shelves in optimal use at all times. It checks out each request for use of RAM space to make sure it is vital, and when the allotted time to use RAM runs out, it gives that space to the next prioritized item. File manager. The file manager in the librarian world is more like the archivist, who keeps track of the physical location of all stored information, controls access to certain files, and notes when changes have been made to files. Files have types based on their function within the system. Regular files store text, binary, or executable data. Directory files keep track of all the other files, think card catalog. And special files help with communication and process efficiency happening in the computer. Device manager. The device manager checks that all devices are being accessed efficiently and are being deallocated once they are no longer in need of immediate use. Kernel. At the core of an OS is the kernel, or software responsible for running the programs and providing secure access to the machine's hardware. A kernel also schedules the running time of a program and gives universal instructions to certain types of devices. When a computer is first turned on, it runs an initial power-on self-test, POST, to identify and diagnose any potential problems. When POST is complete, a boot sequence conducts an orderly search for non-volatile data storage to load the OS. Once these instructions are found, the electronic circuitry within the computer, known as the Central Processing Unit, or CPU, takes control and loads the OS into the memory system. Types of operating systems. As we know, Most users purchase their devices with a proprietary OS already preloaded. Microsoft Windows is already established on most PCs, arguably making it the most popular OS in the world.
Mac OS, created by Apple, is the system that comes preloaded on all Mac computers.
Although widely used, it only accounts for about 10% of OSs around the world on desktop computers. These OSs and the programs that come with them are used for commercial purposes, and the cost of the OS and the programs on the computer are included in the purchase price. As a result, developers almost always put major restrictions on their use.
You can't legally share your copy of Windows or Mac OS with anyone else because its source code is protected.
It is possible to purchase a computer without a proprietary OS and download an open source OS instead. Although most people don't do it on their own, an open source OS like Linux is freely available for download, and the source code can be modified by the user to suit certain personal needs. Users looking for more control, security, and stability, along with the opportunity to learn more about programming, tend to load open source OSs on their computers. There are many different versions, called distributions, to choose from. Some that are user-friendly for those who don't have a programming background or some serious programming skills.
Check out some of the popular Linux distributions. Ubuntu, Mint, Debian, Fedora, Red Hat, OpenSUSE, Manjaro.
Removable Media Plus OS. Because this is the digital age, after all, you can also carry an OS around on a USB drive or CD rather than on your computer. Insert your removable media into your computer and you've got a bootable OS. This is especially handy if your computer is crashed. In some cases, you can still boot your computer with this removable OS to try and fix the problem from the outside. While this type of portable storage is nifty in certain situations, it is still an asset on the move, which makes it a highly vulnerable one. Malware. Now that you understand some of what makes computers tick, it's time to assume the real challenge of cybersecurity, namely, identifying how these systems can fall prey to attack. And the biggest culprit of all is malware. Malicious, maladjusted, malignant, maligned, malefactor, malady, and for the Harry Potter fans, Malfoy. None of these things are good, so you can probably guess that malware is a harmful practice in the computer world, a tool used to threaten the livelihood of systems and their users. As one of a hacker's most trusted weapons, malware is designed to gain access to or damage a computer without the owner's knowledge. It refers to various forms of harmful software, such as viruses and ransomware. But exactly what malware does, once it finds its way into a computer, will depend on the infiltrator's intentions. After infecting a system, it takes control of the machine and monitors actions, steals data, and creates general chaos. Phishing and spoofing are a couple of common attacks you might recognize.
Through the process of phishing, hackers try to trick the user into volunteering usernames, passwords, and other secure information by carefully crafting an email or link that looks like it's from an authentic company.
Hackers also try to compromise the security of a network with a spoofing attack that gains advantage over a system by masquerading as a familiar person or program. Both of these devilish approaches take advantage of end-user error. When a human being sitting in front of a complex computer system makes the mistake of trusting something they shouldn't. Through the use of malware, hackers can steal your identity, scurry off with your financial information, or just make life on the internet difficult for you. The malware that hackers commonly employ includes viruses, macroviruses, worms, and rootkits. Viruses are pieces of code with the ability to corrupt a system and/or destroy data. They are usually executable files attached to other files, like documents, that become active when the user runs or opens the host file. Macroviruses infect a document or similar application to trigger a series of actions not started by the user. Worms are standalone software that penetrate an OS with the intent of spreading malicious code. Although similar to viruses, worms spread faster because they don't need to be opened to become active. They can use the file transport system of their host to travel without the user's knowledge. And rootkits allow unauthorized users to gain control over a computer system without being detected. Trojan horses are another common form of malware. Hackers design these programs to breach security through the simple act of looking innocent. Trojans cannot self-replicate like worms. They rely on a user to interact with them, just like the original Trojan horse from Greek mythology. A more advanced form of the Trojan horse is known as a remote access Trojan, RAT, which is a malware program that includes a backdoor for administrative control. These are usually downloaded invisibly through something else like a game or an email attachment. Some other advanced malware hackers love includes spyware, which can steal sensitive information, ransomware, which holds information hostage until the recipient pays for its return, adware, which forces unwanted advertising to download to your computer, keyloggers, which are programs that record your every keystroke. The last of these can be especially dangerous, since intruders gain fraudulent access to passwords and other confidential information. But the good news is that there are now some pretty reliable systems in place to detect malicious code and identify strange online behavior. Say your computer is lagging, loading slowly, and freezing a lot. Maybe there are weird files opening and applications running that you did not authorize. What's happening? Before you freak out and consider buying a new computer, remember, this could be a sign of malware running on your system. Yes, it can be removed. And no, it's not always easy. Sometimes malware, clever as it is, can actually detect when it's being monitored, which can make it one annoying computer pest. Sure, searching through strings of malware code looking for hints about where it's hiding might work, but it's certainly not for everyone. For those who aren't familiar with code, they can look like a bunch of unrelated numbers and symbols in some strange configuration. In other words, gibberish. For the average user, this response works best. 1. Disconnect from the internet. 2. Delete temporary files. 3. Download malware scanners. 4. Run the scan. If this sounds too difficult or isn't working, call for professional help. Malware prevention and removal. So, your computer has a virus. Not good, but it's not the end of the world, as there are ways to prevent and remove malware infections. Sure, some cases may require professional intervention, but there are actually a lot of measures you can take on your own to minimize the damage. Manually install and run anti-malware software. Keep software and OSs up to date with current patches. Be careful when downloading files, programs, attachments, and such. Antivirus software. As you would imagine, there are two kinds of antivirus software in the world, free and not free. And as you would guess again, free software typically does not provide the same level of protection as paid software. Yes, it will perform automatic scans for malware and even offer certain add-on checks for bad links, but overall, its watchdog skills are minimal, and it offers almost no technical support. Paid antivirus software outdoes freebies because it offers more comprehensive security tools like identity theft protection and parental controls, and tons more customer support. That said, there is a time and place for free software, especially if you have a computer that doesn't access the internet much or that you only use for activities like gaming. But for users with sensitive data who want real peace of mind, there is no alternative to paid antivirus software. Not only has the world recently watched hackers carry off billions of dollars and meddle in the outcome of a presidential election, there seems to be a new malware development almost every day. And as soon as we've wrapped our minds around how to protect ourselves, it assumes another surprising form. Those in the know have started to predict the different ways cybercriminals are likely honing their skills, like stealing data using legitimate protocols instead of bulky malware. In other words, they will no longer need to trick users into letting them in. They will have their own key to the front door. And for those who don't take proper precautions, the online world will become a much less inviting place.
Knowledge check. Test your knowledge of new information by answering these questions and then review the feedback. Question 1. Arjun is worried that his computer is overheating. Which of the following hardware components is most likely to blame? Power supply unit, PSU. The PSU is responsible for regulating temperature by controlling the power voltage. If the computer is overheating, the PSU may be faulty. Hard disk drive, HDD. The HDD is a form of secondary memory and is responsible for permanently storing data. Consider a component that regulates temperatures in a computer. Central processing unit, CPU. The CPU is responsible for interpreting and executing instructions. It does not regulate temperatures in a computer. Motherboard. The motherboard is the backbone of the computer that hardware components attach to. It does not directly regulate temperatures itself. Question 2. Which of the following statements is false? Virtual memory uses both hardware and software. This is a true statement. Virtual memory uses software, the OS, as well as hardware, hard drive and RAM, to create storage. The role of virtual memory is to expand primary memory and avoid shortages. This is a true statement. Computers only have certain amounts of RAM, so virtual memory can help the computer avoid running out of storage. Virtual memory is stored in the browser. This is a false statement because virtual memory uses the physical hard drive to create new data storage. Virtual memory is necessary because computers have a limited amount of RAM. This is a true statement and a good summary of the point of having virtual memory. Question 3. Which of the following represents the correct order of events when a computer is turned on? CPU loads the OS into RAM. Post, boot sequence. The CPU cannot load the OS into RAM before the actual booting of the computer occurs. Consider that POST stands for Power On Self Test, and it must run when the computer is first turned on to check for potential problems. CPU loads the OS into RAM, boot sequence, POST. The CPU cannot load the OS into RAM before the boot sequence occurs. Consider that POST stands for Power On Self Test, and it must run when the computer is first turned on to check for potential problems. Boot sequence, POST, CPU loads the OS into RAM. The boot sequence cannot occur before the Power On Self Test checks for potential problems. POST, boot sequence, CPU loads the OS into RAM. The Power On Self Test must first check for potential problems, then the boot sequence can occur, followed by the CPU loading the OS into RAM. Question 4. Marcus has noticed some strange things happening on his laptop recently. Random files are executed, various system settings have been reconfigured, his bank account password was compromised, and his credit card was just used fraudulently. What is most likely to blame? Rootkit. A rootkit allows a hacker to gain control over a computer system without being detected, giving the hacker the ability to execute files, change system settings, and spy on Marcus's computer activities. Virus. A virus mainly destroys data or corrupts a computer system. It does not involve spying on a user's computer activities, changing system settings, and randomly executing files. Spyware. Spyware is a type of malware that steals sensitive information only. It does not change system settings or randomly execute files. Ransomware. Ransomware is a type of malware that locks an entire computer or portions of it until the user pays to have it unlocked. It does not involve spying on the user's computer activities, randomly executing files, or changing system settings.
Conclusion. In a nutshell, we have just explored the three biggest pools of the computing world: types of devices, what makes them run, and their number one enemy. And as our discussion of cybersecurity continues, you will begin to see how they all represent a mini frontier of the larger safety endeavor. Armed with this knowledge, you will possess all the power you need to protect yourself and your assets from harm.